Greg Farrell is the president and CEO of Farrell Wealth and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Good morning. Show's Money Matters with Greg on 103.1 FM here at WVLP, local here at Valparaiso Community Radio. My name is Greg Farrell and the host of the show. We talk finances, we talk money on this show, and we hopefully help you with some things, some information, give you some information down the line that can save you some money. So we're live here today. We've got a bunch of things going on around to talk about today in the next hour or so. We're on Twitter. Find us on Farrell Wealth, at Farrell Wealth on Twitter. And then you can also find us on the web. And the as far as the broadcast goes, you can go live. It is on farrellwealth.com. It's also on WVLP.org. And you can call in the show, 219-476-9000. And that's my house cleaning for today. Overall, we'd like to be able to get everybody the information they need, so you can contact us and with any questions you might have, or anything you want to be able to talk about when in regards to money. So it's me today. We have a number of guests on the show over time, but today it's just me. We're going to talk about the markets and some of the stuff that we're it's going on right now. We have a big Fed meeting coming up here this week. It is a big deal. Everyone will be glued to their television sets and radios, podcasts, you name it, will be live and ready to go when Janet Yellen announces or doesn't announce any more movement in interest rates. We've been talking about that a lot on this show as to what it matters for the market and how things have been affected here recently. Tons of volatility recently in the market. We've had basically 54 days where we didn't even have a 1% move, and then we had 4 or 5 days back-to-back-to-back of over 1%, so either sell-off or up. So it has been very, very active lately, and September has been very, very busy as things have been moving along. We talked a lot about on the show last week about corporate earnings and what we're seeing as far as corporate earnings goes. One of the ways to be able to value many of the things you have in investments in the investment world is to be able to find metrics that give you an opportunity to guide you and help you as an investor. One of those is earnings, and we've not been seeing the earnings overall as much as we'd like from many of the companies out there. We're going to talk about some of that today. We're going to talk about whether the market is too expensive and what we're seeing as far as that goes. We're going to talk a little bit about bonds and what is a bond, helping you out with what's going on in the bond world right now, especially with what's going on in the Fed. And then we're going to go into 54 ways to save money, kind of circle back here and try to give you some ideas on some ways to be able to save some money going into the fall here. We did a recent Going Back to School podcast that is on iTunes, along with all the other episodes we have out there. On iTunes, you just search Money Matters with Greg. You can find it on iTunes and listen in. And very excited for everybody to be listening in out there and being a part of the program. It's come a long way. We started a little under 2 years ago or so. And hopefully we're getting better every day and with more shows that can help you save some money. So, again, update on the market. Friday was pretty bad, not necessarily the best in the market. You had higher than expected consumer prices that were released on in the morning of Friday. Now, today, we're up. Overall, we've sort of recovered a little bit today. We'll see, with oil being up over 2% today, which is interesting because it's interesting to see the market has really sort of diverted away from following oil in the last 3 or 4 months, and it seems like it's kind of going back to where oil goes, so goes the market. So the market on Friday was a lot of weight on the U.S. equities overall really came on the heels of the weakness in the European markets, and that was spurred by the U.S. Department of Justice proposal that Deutsche Bank pay a $14 billion settlement related to sales of mortgage-backed securities before the 2008 financial crisis. So this is interesting that this just came about. Deutsche Bank balked and said, no, thank you, don't feel like paying it. And there was a lot of turmoil that actually had, so it'll be interesting to see how the negotiations go back with that. Now, you know, there are a number of banks that have settled on that mortgage-backed securities lawsuit by the Department of Justice, and many have put this behind them, but Deutsche Bank is still arguing. So looking back, really, to yesterday's to Friday's session, you really saw the NASDAQ outperform as equities were led by the tech sector for the third day in a row, and that mainly came on with Apple. Apple had been very, very solid throughout the week. It is back to another high, most of a one-year high, a little over $115. And so they're following up on their iPhone 7s. So basically following that stock and where that is, that helped the NASDAQ. In Asia, both the Shanghai Composite and the Hang Seng were closed for the holiday, so it was quiet over there. The Nikkei in Japan was up 0.7% on increased speculation that the Bank of Japan will cut negative rates further next week, which is this week. So that'll be interesting to see. We'll all be watching the B of J. And then, meanwhile, oil was under pressure on Friday at $42.85 a barrel, but today is up, and the 10-year yield overall is a little change at 1.69. For the most part, staying where it has been for the last week or so. The August CPI came out. It ran hot, without a doubt, but likely not enough to cause the Fed to raise rates as soon as next week. Now, that consumer price index rose 1.1% year over year in August, while core CPI rose 2.3%. So both readings were higher than expected, and an acceleration from July. So very interesting that, though, beneath the surface of that CPI for services, that two-thirds of the CPI posted a 3% gain over the past year, the strongest reading in almost 8 years, while the CPI for goods overall fell 2.2%. And as we approach the anniversary of the worst of the oil price declines in quarter three and quarter four, really the goods category should turn positive and drive headline inflation to close 2% by the year end of 2016 and well above 2% in early 2017. Now, this week, it's all about the Fed. FOMC is focused for this week. And although there are key reports due out during this week on housing, housing starts, home builders sentiment and existing home sales, and manufacturing September purchases and managers index markets will all be focused on the Fed. So the FOMC will release its statement and a new set of dot plots that they've been talking about, and a new economic forecast at 2 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, September 21st. And Fed Chair Janet Yellen will hold a press conference at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Now, we don't expect the Fed to raise rates, and you know, at least in this meeting, but we do expect them to begin preparing markets for a hike in December. The Bank of Japan, with their meeting, it looks like they're going to cut again, and then you have the speech from ECB President Mario Draghi, and China's property price data is due out in August as well. So that's basically shaping this week up for you to kind of give you a guide as to where things are. It's all things Fed coming here in this Wednesday overall. Now, Friday was another big day for tech. Technology was leading the way higher since the start of the third quarter, and it was a leading group again on Friday with a 1.6% return. And since the end of June, tech is up 9%, with financials the closest group at 4.3%. So the weakest performer has been utilities, down 7%, and the threat of higher yields will put pressure on this group without a doubt. Remember that tech in general has been the lagging sector much of 2015, 2016, but that appears certainly to be changing. So with the S&P up 1% for the week last week, and it's now moved 1% up more in the last 4 or 5 days, you know, remember it's gone 43 straight days without that 1% move. And, you know, the second half of September until late October is historically one of the most volatile times of the year. So be careful out there. Make sure you're doing your work and you're doing your due diligence and making sure that you are careful with your work on your investments and trying to be able to pick the right time. We always talk about dollar cost averaging here, making sure that you're not necessarily putting all your eggs in one basket at one time. But wanted to kind of walk you through what's going on this week and what happened last week. So that's what happened in the market. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm that I run, CEO and President of. And we do some really great things with clients and talk about their wealth. And hopefully we're able to do what we do and use what we use with all of those clients and bring them to you. So without a doubt, trying to add some value here and talk about the markets, but also talk about some other things that will help save you some money along the way. It's a financial literacy show we started a few years ago, and we're very thankful to WVLP and 103.1 FM for having the opportunity to be able to do this and really enjoy the chance to be able to teach and coach. I've been a coach all my life, pretty much, and just out of college, and then onwards, coaching a number of different things for kids and high school football, all the way to now sixth grade soccer, which is a fantastic. We had a great game on Sunday and a great game on Saturday, and it's always fun to be able to teach and to coach, and that's what we do here, is trying to teach you and coach you with your finances. Now, one of the things I want to talk about with the market is here we are. We're up 5% for the year. The S&P is up 5.7% return overall. And really, should investors sell now? I mean, that's 5.7%, 7%. You know, it's a good year for stocks. And the S&P 500 overall, even though it was down a little on Friday, you know, has it been too good? And 7.5 years into a bull market, you've got valuations are high. You know, we see little upside in stocks between now and year end, but Friday's more than, you know, 2% drop. This is the last week's overall was you know, the week before last. This is actually September 12th. Basically, that big drop that happened was the first drop of more than 1% since after the Brexit vote in June 27th that we were so diligent about talking about here on the show. And, you know, you add to that September's typically weak. It sort of all begs for the question of should you sell now? And certainly taking some profits, rebalancing portfolios according to a regular plan is without a doubt prudent. We talk a lot about that here. But in the, you know, overall, we just sort of want to lay out some reasons as to why selling now may not be the best move, even though we could certainly think it might make sense. We often hear that stocks are expensive. We've been talking about that on the show here. And in fact, last week, the price-to-earnings ratio, using its median calculation, is more than 50% above its long-term average. You know, traditional market cap weighted valuations are also high, and the current PE of 18 is above the average of 15.2, going back all the way to 1950, and even above the higher post-1980 average of 16.4. So It's expensive. I've said this in the show a couple times. When you are shopping right now for stocks, you're shopping at Saks Fifth Avenue right off the rack. And it's very difficult to get deals. And where do you go now? So even though the valuations are higher, we don't necessarily see that they are high. Valuations have not been good predictors of stock market performance throughout the last year. But, you know, it should be more indicative that a correlation between the S&P 500's PE and the index's return over the following year is really negative 0.31%. It's really relatively low based on over 45 years of data. So stocks can stay overvalued longer than we think they should. So we encourage investors to focus on really the macroeconomic, fundamental, and technical factors, not necessarily valuations for indications of an impending market correction or bear market. Now, the point is valuations are very important, but are they everything? No. So, you know, they were the reason to sell during the tech bubble. Sure, it was hard, but it was hard to tell when. Everything went up every single day. And the one-year return on the S&P 500 from March 31st, 2000, at a PE of 28.2 was negative 21.7%. So valuations were high well before that, suggesting that even in extremes predicting market direction using valuations is an inexact science at best. I was trading in the pits at the time in Chicago, in the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, and of which I did so for about 14 years, trading derivatives on individual tech issues and names that you all know, the Microsofts of the world, the AOLs. And I watched many, many people go out of business betting on the fact that these stocks would go down, and they didn't. They just kept on going up. Now, ultimately, they were vindicated and they were right, but they might not have been able to survive long enough to have a position. So one thing I've always learned in trading is make sure you're always around for the next day. And that was good advice for a lot of people that were betting on the fact that they were hopefully going to make a fortune if the stocks ever did go down. And many of them ultimately did. Overall, it was a brutal time in 2004 as things sort of fell apart. But you had to wait 3 years to do it, and the valuations never really changed until that third year. So, in fact, they went higher and higher and higher. So as PEs rise, subsequent returns are lower, and vice versa. So eyeballing, you know, some things out there that you see, the correlation between PE and returns over the next 10 years is negative 0.87. So a much closer relationship than PEs and one-year returns is very important to think about. So also, let's go into the calendar. Look, everyone knows in the investment world that September is typically not necessarily the best month, and historically it's always very weak. So could this be a great, you know, opportunity to be able to sell the sell-off? You know, the market trend appears to be a key determinant of the market's performance in September and really kind of for the rest of the year. So we can kind of measure the market's trend based on the S&P 500 compared with its 200-day moving average. When you see that stocks are in an uptrend, basically, you see the last 47 instances when the S&P was above a 200-day moving average on September 1st, and this goes all the way back to 1950. So the average maximum drawdown in September was just 1.9%, and the max drawdown over the rest of the year was a manageable 4.4%. So stocks were higher from September through the end of the year 83% of the time. Now, conversely, nearly all the biggest late-year drops take place during the 19 instances of the S&P, during the S&P when the September and the downtrend on the opposite side. So you've got to think that, you know, the average drawdown in these scenarios was 8.9%, about twice the average drawdown with an uptrend, while stocks were higher over the rest of the year, only 57.9% of the time if September was down. So going to try to keep an eye on September, and I think you really have to get through this week to see what's going on with the Fed to make sure that you are considering all things. But the valuations and the calendar may not look good for reasons to sell, but there are, in fact, reasons to consider buying here as well. We have really had overall LPL and our stock research team that we follow so diligently and we mention so many times on this show because they're so good, and you can follow them at LPL Research on Twitter. You know, basically, they find that the 2016 stock market forecast that they established, which was mid to single-digit returns, is really not needed to change, and a double-digit return for stocks probably wouldn't shock them at all. So why? And you look at this and you say, well, right now we really have low recession odds, and even though things might be anemic out there and the economy doesn't seem great, we continue to see that the odds of recession over the next 12 to 18 months as being in the 20% range based on favorite indicators and really key signs of excesses in the economy that might help overall in the overall economy. And if a recession were more than a year away, based on data back all the way to 1950, the odds are over 80% that the S&P delivers a positive annual return anyway. So making sure that we're considerate of that and that we're it's not as bad as you think it is. Now, the other thing is central banks are supporting this low interest rate environment. And if the economy weakens further, the Fed may deliver additional stimulus overall. We don't see that necessarily, but they may, and that's all the market needs to hear. So the Fed could state its intentions to maintain low interest rates for longer, potentially initiate another round of quantitative easing, more bond purchases overall, you name it. But we don't like relying on the policies to prop up stocks overall, and that's just not a good thing. We want everything to be able to be on its own. But you know, the fact remains that markets have responded to them, and low bond yields continue to enhance the appeal of stocks. There's just not a lot of yield out there, and people are more than willing to be able to take on some stock risk. Two other things that are really having something to think about here is earnings rebound. Future earnings estimates have tended to run historically high over the end of the year. The economic data, along with the stability in oil, the U.S. dollar, suggests that really earnings earnings rebound is doable here at the end of the fourth quarter. Current earnings growth expectations based on Thomson Reuters consensus data for the fourth quarter of 2016 and the second quarters of 2017 are plus 8, plus 15, and plus 13, respectively. So remember, markets tend to look out about 6 months ahead. So they are being much more positive towards earnings growth and earnings rebound in the future here. And then finally, the S&P has historically performed well during the fourth quarter with an average gain of over 4%, with gains 79% of the time going back to 1950. So fourth quarters of election years are no better than an average quarter. But excluding 2008, the average fourth quarter gain during an election year is 3.6%. And the S&P 500 is higher 87% of those quarters. So we continue to believe that the markets should welcome more clarity and a potential election outcome when it arrives. And really, overall, as we close up here just before the break, neither valuations nor seasonality appear to be good reasons to sell stocks right now. In fact, the number of factors we have discussed here suggests that stocks could potentially go higher between now and year end overall, and we're sticking really with our mid single digit return forecast that we had. Don't be surprised really that we see a pickup in volatility and things get even crazier, which is exactly what's happening. So consider these opportunities and looking to invest and launch your prudent strategy of diversification and making sure that you are you're doing your homework, and then ultimately when you get a chance to be able to buy, you keep your head about you, you keep calm, and you allocate money where you know you have an opportunity to be able to do that. So we're going to talk here, coming up here after the break, about 54 ways to save money. I'm going to give you a bunch of different ideas. I want to thank at LPL Research for that report on exactly what is going on right now and do we sell now. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm here locally, but then also in a number of states nationwide. The show's Money Matters with Greg on 103.1 FM and WVLP. We talk about money here. We're saving you some money. Make sure you tune in here. Thanks for tuning in today and being a part of the group overall here in this wonderful day in September and the fall of in the Midwest. And we really hope that you'll hang with us here as we talk about the 54 ways to save money. We'll be right back in a bit. Thanks.
Swing on a Friday night, two friends alone in the pale moonlight. Question posed to ease the pain. Kiss to seal the promise made. Your eyes reach out and pull me in. Your beauty makes me dance again. Fire and ice can shake the right, but love's pure heart is a worthy guide. You're my pill when waves come crashing. You're the lock upon my door. You're the password to my treasure. You're the one that I adore. You're the one that I adore. A torrid dance in the daily grind, we find romance. Silver screen could never hold your grace and beauty left untold. Seasons bring a life of change and players exit from the stage. Hard to live a life that's true. An honest friend I have found in you. You're my pill when waves come crashing. You're the lock upon my door. You're the password to my treasure. You're the one that I adore. You're the one that I adore.
All right, thank you, Mayor John Casas, who is singing The One. That's one of his older albums. Locally here, we're a big fan of Mayor Casas, who's done some really cool things around Valparaiso to beautify the place and really build it up as one of the leading small towns in America. And we love living here under the Midwestern charm that is Valpo, and then also having the technology to feel like we're part of the universe and able to contribute to that universe out there in the world, technology-wise. Amongst the ways we do that on this show, and Money Matters with Greg, again, I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. The show's Money Matters with Greg on W103.1 WVLP FM, and it's also podcasted on iTunes. So if you are unable to listen to the 40-mile radius signal or so that we have here at WVLP, please follow us on iTunes and take a look at some of the podcasts we have out there, and hopefully you'll be able to save some loose change. Overall, it is a show about financial literacy, helping you save some money. So for that reason, I really wanted to go over some of the things that can kind of help you. A lot of this stuff is very common sense oriented, without a doubt. But, you know, simple things like putting aside 50 cents a day over the course of a year will allow for nearly, you know, $500 added to, basically that's like 40% of a $500 emergency fund. Little things like that, kind of keeping track of your spending and making sure that you're doing some good things as far as savings tips and a number of different things out there that can help you. Hopefully, this show is one of those places, and we're going to give you some tips here now that we found from a Kiplinger letter that I really enjoyed. It was a nice way to be able to kind of walk through, and want to thank at Kiplinger for this information that they have about the 54 ways. I wanted to share it with the audience here today overall. 54 ways to save money. So we've got a number of different things. I'm going to bounce around all and around, but we're going to talk about transportation. We're going to talk about family, insurance, how to save money on insurance, heating and cooling, prescription drugs, banking, you name it. So lots of information here, but I want to make sure that you are educated in regards to all this. Just like I mentioned, you know, you save 50 cents a day. Ultimately, over the course of a year, that's well over, you know, it's a nice chunk into an emergency fund. We talk about an emergency savings account here to be able to make sure that you have enough money to be able to put some money away and sort of reallocate those things that are out there. We're going to talk about maybe what is your number when it comes to emergency savings accounts. Many people talk about 6 months' salary, being able to have enough saved up that if something does happen and you lose your job, not to say that you'll ever lose your job, right? But if you do lose your job, what are some of the things you can do to make sure that you are okay, you can get your feet back up underneath you and kind of start over. Some of those things that you need to know about is, you know, many people out there in the world don't even have an emergency fund, and that's really what we're working to get to. So although with an emergency fund, there's really no one-size-fits-all, how much is enough answer, what I always talk about is your zero. Everybody's zero is different. And many people's zero, unfortunately, is negative. So when you start thinking about what your zero is, and what your zero is what it takes for me to be able to sleep at night, to know that I've got enough money saved up, that I'm okay, that if something happens overall, that I'm going to be all right. Some people's at zero is, you know, it's $500. Some people it's $10,000 or even $50,000. Like I said, 6 months of cash saved up due to loss of job is very, very important. We have a client whose zero is $1 million, and he wants to be able to write a check for $1 million, always has, and that's his zero. It is what it is. It's, we're not here to judge, and he wants to be able to always make sure that he's okay to that point. Now, this is an extremely high net worth individual, so it changes based on your income level and how much money you have. But you know, the ideal amount for an emergency fund may depend on your financial situation and lifestyle. I mean, for example, if you own your home or provide for a number of dependents, you may be more likely to face financial emergencies than someone that doesn't own their home and that is renting and can get something fixed because it's in their rental contract. You know, if this crisis you face in a job loss or injury that affects your income, you may need to depend on these emergency funds for an extended period of time. So what we're trying to do here is try to give you some tips, 54 tips to talk about ultimately making sure you're putting that money away into a savings account. Now, I'll give you a fast fact here, and this comes from our website on Feral Wealth that is about your emergency. It's titled Your Emergency Fund, How Much is Enough? If you go to FeralWealth.com and you go into our resources page, you can find this. It's under all articles down at the bottom of the page. You click on all articles, and there's a number of different things there you can find. But only 10% of people with a college degree say they have no emergency savings. You know, that's compared with 42% of those of high school education or less. And that came from Bankrate.com, June 21st, 2016. So you really have to think about, you know, what are we doing when we start talking about these tips and how we're doing it. If you look at how America is doing when it comes to emergency savings, 26% say that they have no emergency savings. 24% say they have some but less than 3 months' expenses. 17% say three to five months of expenses. 23% say enough to cover 6 months or more. And 9% basically said that they don't know in that poll that Bankrate.com did. But basically, money that you're saving in an emergency fund should be put in some place that's easily accessible, which is why many people choose traditional bank savings accounts. Savings accounts typically offer just a modest rate and really almost no rate of return right now. CDs may provide slightly higher rates, but they have to sit, they have to be locked away until that CD matures. The FDIC, or the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, that insures bank accounts and certificates of deposits up to $250,000 per depositor, per institution in interest, so you want to think about that. But CDs are time deposits offered by banks, thrift institutions, and credit unions that can give you a higher interest rate. So depending on your particular goals overall, really in the amount that you have saved, some combination of lower risk investments might be the best choice. So, money held in a money market fund is not insured or guaranteed by the FDIC or any other government agency. Money market funds, they seek to preserve the value of an investment of $1 a share, but it's also possible to lose money. I mean, it's very, very seldom you would, but make sure you always check in prospectuses. Money market funds, mutual funds are sold by prospectus. So you want to consider the charges, the risks, the expenses overall. But read the prospectuses containing this and being very carefully before you invest and send any money in. But there are some places to be able to go to gather that emergency fund. So where are we going to save some money and using some tips here? So really you have to think over each expense purchase that you might have on impulse items for at least 24 hours. Acting on the principle that will really sort of mean that you have far fewer regrets overall on impulse purchases and far more money for a savings account. So sleep on it. Make sure you spend at least 24 hours before you purchase something. Now, we like to advocate using debit and credit cards prudently. Overall, to minimize those interest charges, try to limit credit card purchases to those you pay off in full at the end of every single month. You always want to make sure if you use a debit card, don't rely on the overdraft feature to spend money you don't have. That really adds up, and the bank fees certainly add up. You know, with either approach, you'll have more money available for that emergency savings that we're trying to get you to have. If you're looking for an easy and effective way to establish a budget, begin on the first day of the new month. You get a receipt for everything you purchase overall, and stack and review those receipts at the end of the month, and you'll clearly be able to see kind of where your money's going. That's a very simple way to be able to do it nowadays with the tracking mechanisms you have. If you have a smartphone and if you have the ability to be able to drop an app into your smartphone, there's a number of different ways, or maybe your bank has an app that can track some of your expenses. Highly recommend, however you're doing it, that you're doing it as simple as possible. And stacking and reviewing the receipts at the end of the month is taking, you know, a half an hour on a Sunday morning and going through things just to see where the expenses are going is a really smart way to do it if you're not technology inclined and don't have a phone. Always pays to practice preventative dental care. Obviously cleaning routines prevents fillings, root canals, and dental crowns, which are extremely expensive, and of course no fun. Nobody wants to have a drill bit in their head during the day and they have to pay for it. So most people don't track what they spend overall, and they may not realize the expenses that add up more than their budget can handle. So really, to keep track of your spending on transportation, food, entertainment, you can kind of put those amounts into an envelope, and this will help you avoid buying things you really don't need. And that's what's really left over. It can kind of go into savings. Now, this is an old school way of doing things. Nowadays, with bill pay and everything else, you have to make sure that those are paid automatically. But you can at least track it either through a legal pad or an envelope system. Whatever works best for you, and then you can have it automatically debited out of your bank account. At least you're seeing it and following it. Taking advantage of any discounts or incentive programs out there is extremely important. Many of those things can actually be provided through an employer. If your employer has scale, for example, if a company you work for offers discounted rates on computers, fitness center memberships, movie tickets and passes to summer festivals, take advantage of it. And then, of course, don't forget to invest in the best deal of all, which is investing in your 401k and making sure you're paying yourself first. We talk a lot about that on this show. If there's a match, it's free money. So, of course, you want to be able to make sure that you're putting money away for yourself and getting double of whatever that match is that's available through your company. So I would highly recommend you talk to check your internet, your corporate intranet, or talk to a human resources representative as fast as possible to make sure you sign up and if you are eligible. One way to establish a savings discipline is to save, quote unquote, an amount equal to whatever is spent on non-essential indulgences. So, if you put a matching amount in the cookie jar for your expenditures on beer, wine, cigarettes, designer coffee, if you can't afford the saving, the matching amount, you really can't afford the $4 super almond low-fat triple twist latte. So, that's a really nice way to be able to say, all right, well, if I'm going to go out and buy a latte, I'm going to buy an $8 one, save $4 and put it away. It's a nice way to be able to make sure you add it up and get that emergency account filled. You can take the amount the item cost, really, and divide it by your hourly wage as well, which is always a nice way to be able to do it. So if it's a $50 pair of shoes, you can make, and you make $10 an hour, ask yourself, you know, are those shoes really worth 5 hours of long work? Sort of helps keep things into perspective, without a doubt. And if you aim for short-term savings goals, you know, set aside $20 a week or a month rather than a long-term savings goal, rather than that long-term savings goals, you know, such as $200 over a year or whatever. People seem to save more successfully when they keep the short-term goal in sight. So, you know, $20 a week or $20 a month versus saying, well, I'm going to save $200 this year or $500 this year. It makes it a little bit more simple. Yeah, when you're saving money by buying items online, you can save it by buying in bulk, of course. You know that some of these companies offer free shipping on many of those large orders. You have the Amazons of the world where you're literally able to go shopping online. And these clearance items are really sometimes available. Good savings can be found on non-perishable groceries, diapers, you name it. So that time, that savings of time also saves money where you're not necessarily able to drive around and find. That's why the dot-com shopping regimen has certainly become such an institution with being able to find ways to be able to shop. But a great way to be able to incorporate an online buying strategy into your daily routine will help you save money over time, especially with free shipping overall. So now we're going to go into sort of some divisions here on 54 ways to save some money. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and president of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm that helps a number of different companies and high net worth clients save money, put money away, and invest their money. We're local here to Valparaiso, Indiana, and love it here. It's a great town. I highly recommend you stop by and check it out. We're also have clients all over the nation in a number of different states overall. So trying to save you some money here today as we talk about some of the things that can help you save money, the 54 ways to save money overall. So I hope those were some sort of things that might help. Now, getting a little bit more specific in regards to food, let's talk about those things that really, really matter to all of us and basically we all need to be able to, the essential items out there. One idea is you could substitute coffee for expensive coffee drinks. You know, that $2 a day you could save buying a coffee rather than, you know, that the cappuccino or latte would allow you over the course of a year to completely fund a $500 emergency fund overall. Bringing lunch to work is a great way to be able to save some money. If buying lunch at work costs $5 or $10, but making lunch at home costs $2.50, then in a year, you could afford to create a $500 emergency fund and still have money left over overall. You want to eat out fewer times each month, and this not only for your health, but when you do eat out well, and make sure you frequent all the local establishments that have great food, especially around here in this area, and hopefully in your area as well. But if it costs $25 to eat out and only $5 to eat in, then you know you save that $20 you save each month allows you to almost completely fund a $500 emergency savings account in a year. So, you know, you typically shop for food with a list, stick to it. People do not who do food shopping with a list. They buy little less or little else, and they spend much less money than those who decide they want to buy when they get there. And also, I highly recommend never going to the supermarket hungry. It's always a mistake. Annual savings overall could easily be hundreds of dollars if you just shop with a list. So even if you dictate it on your phone and basically walk through your notes or whatever it might be, make sure you you have a list and you stick to it. Prescription drugs and over-the-counter drugs. Look, ask your physician to consider any prescribing any generic drugs that are out there that are able for you to be able to take. You know, generic drugs can cost several hundred dollars less than purchasing annually than name brand drugs. Find the lowest cost place to purchase these prescription drugs. There's a number of different places out there that do it, and a couple different apps out there as well. You can shop online for like the Good RXs. There's an app that's Good RX, and also an online website that will tell you which place is the cheapest to buy it, And you can download your own good RX card, prescription card, to be able to do that too. So I highly recommend you check that out. You know, make sure to check out that you not only, you know, your local pharmacists, but also local supermarkets, discount centers, mail order pharmacies all have lower cost pharmaceuticals and prescription drugs. So, you know, if you purchase the store brand over the counter medications as well, store brand medications can also often cost 20 to 30% less than the nationally advertised brands. These savings can easily save well over hundreds of dollars a year if you're purchasing the store-bought ibuprofen or whatever it might be that you might be. So make sure you're checking out the store brands without a doubt. Going into banking, some of the things you can save in the banking world: avoiding bouncing checks and overdraft fees each month. You know, the $20 or $30 you save on not bouncing a check each month really could save enough money for a $500 emergency savings account very quickly. Reduce your credit card debt by $1,000. That $1,000 debt reduction will probably save you $150 to $200 a year, and much more if you're paying penalties rates of 20 to 30%. Make your monthly credit card payment on time. We always talk about this as well. The $30 to $35 you save for not being charged a late fee each month on one card could save you as much money for the year to fund that $500 emergency fund. And then also use only ATMs that your bank or credit union is affiliated with. There are some places that say that they have a free ATM, and that might be the case from one side, but what about your financial institution? Make sure that you are always considering that, you know, if you pull out $100 and $3 comes out, last time I checked, that's 3%. And, you know, the stock market's up a little over 5% for the year right now. You're pulling out 3% of your money and giving it to somebody else. Make sure you're really watching where you're pulling your money out of and making sure that you're not going to get hit with a silly $3 charge. That just seems shameful. Going into insurance. You want to shop around, obviously, for auto, homeowners insurance. Make sure you are getting good insurance with good, reputable places. You don't want to be, you know, before renewing your existing policies each year, you can check out the rates of competing companies. And there's a website at indiana.gov that actually shows it for the state of Indiana. But if you're listening on podcasts and you know out there, each of your states, we have a number of people listening nationwide right now. So, you know, each of your states has a state insurance department. So make sure you go to that website, that state department website, and check for annual premiums that may be several hundred dollars or lower overall. Now, you can raise your deductibles on auto and homeowners insurance if you're willing to pay $500 to $1,000 on a claim rather than $100 or $250. You can reduce those annual premiums by as much as several hundred dollars. Just you have to be able to make sure that, especially, look, if you're working hard to get this emergency fund up increasing, this is maybe what you were able to use it for at one time, would be a large deductible overall for a car if something happens. You want to be able to make sure you assess your life insurance coverage without a doubt. I mean, if your children are now on their own or if your spouse works, you may not need as much life insurance as you did before. So annual premiums on a term life policies would typically fully fund an average savings account, for that year. And we're just trying to get to $500 here. And then that might be even higher if your average savings account needs to be higher. So making sure that you are assessing your life insurance needs. You know, consider dropping credit insurance coverage on installment loans. Many consumers don't need credit insurance because they have sufficient assets to protect themselves in the event of death or disability or unemployment. So terminating this coverage often reduces financing charges by 3 percentage points and a savings of about $1,000 on a four-year $200,000 installment loan. It makes a huge difference. So want to consider dropping that credit insurance coverage if you don't necessarily need it. Overall, let's go to transportation, try to save you some money on your cars. Obviously, keeping your engine tuned up and its tires inflated to their proper pressure, that's a simple one, but a lot of things that people just don't do. Doing both can save you over 100 years in gas overall, so that's pretty big. You want to shop around for gas, a number of different apps, including Gas Buddy, that are out there that compare prices at different gas stations. That can save you hundreds of years now, or $100 a year. Now, I don't recommend driving 5 or 10 miles away to go get the cheapest gas to save 5 cents on a gallon. Let's be perfectly honest, people. You know, let's look at the math on time spent and dollars spent overall just to save a couple cents here or there on a gallon of gas. But you never know, you might be able to have something available out there that does save. It could be a lot better. So GasBuddy.com is probably your best bet in regards to that. You know, when driving, try to avoid those fast startups and stops overall. Over time, you'll save hundreds of dollars on lower gas maintenance cards. You know, take fewer cab rides or fewer Uber rides if you can. I mean, public transit instead of cabs can save $5 to $10 a trip or more, and the savings could complete an emergency fund pretty quickly. So making sure you're checking airlines for all cheap fares as well. Since there's really no website that lists all discount carriers, you want to check out the websites with discount carriers like Southwest, JetBlue, possibly for saving hundreds of dollars overall. You don't really want to pay for space you don't need. That's another thing in housing that really helps. Americans have relatively large houses and apartments, and you want to think about more efficiently using the space so you can purchase or rent less square footage. Overall, that's a really smart thing to be able to think about when you start thinking about square footage. You want to live relatively near your workplace. And obviously, this isn't necessarily always possible, but driving 5,000 miles less a year can lower transportation costs by more than $1,000. You want to refinance your mortgage to lower interest rates and interest rate charges. Consider financing your mortgage to lower the rate and term. You know, on a 15-year, $100,000 fixed-rate mortgage, lowering the rate from, let's say, just 7% to 6.5%. Obviously, it's much lower now. But you can save more than $5,000. Just an example here. Save more than $5,000 in interest charge over the life of the loan. So you want to be looking at that, especially now with interest rates lower. I highly recommend you find a professional that you know and trust, that you have vetted and done some due diligence on to be able to help you with your home equity loan. And there's a number of people we'd recommend if you want to call the show at 219-476-9000. We can certainly help you out with that as well. But as you accumulate home equity more rapidly, thus, you know, really increase your ability to be able to cover these large emergency expenditures overall. So you want to choose your home repair contractors really wisely. I know there's a number of different services out there. One that comes off the top of my head is Angie's List, and you can go online and follow them. They just announced that they have a free service where you can vet contractors and make sure that you favor contractors who have successfully performed work for people that you neither know or online reviews. You always want to insist on a written fixed price bid overall. Don't make full payment until the satisfactory completion of the work is made. That's very important. So don't pay up front overall until the deal's done. And then also making sure that if you do pay any sort of money, you're paying in a smaller fee or a deposit before you give them the balance overall to make sure that the work's done. In regards to housing, some more savings you've got are in heating and cooling. You've got to really ask your local electric or gas utility for a free, low-cost home energy audit. Any of the companies will do this. They'll come into your house and basically give you an audit, and the audit may reveal inexpensive ways to reduce home heating and cooling costs by hundreds of dollars, you know, a year. And keep in mind that the payback period of less than 3 years or even 5 years usually will save you lots of money in the long term overall. You want to weatherproof your home. You know, caulking holes and cracks, overall is really, really important to sort of let, you know, letting that warm air escape in the winter and the cold air escape in the summer. Local hardware stores had those materials and quite possibly useful advice as well to really find inexpensively ways to shop and stop unwanted heating and that cooling loss. You want to use window coverings to block or let in sunlight. You know, in the summer, you know, using these coverings to block sunlight always helps keeping the house cool. In winter, open the coverings to let the sunshine warm the house. That can save hundreds of dollars annually. And then finally, before we finish here, we're going to get cut short, but clothing, you know, you look for sales at discounts at outlets. There is a huge price difference between clothing on sale. You always want to consider purchases, you know, previously used from Goodwill. There's some really Goodwill stores out there. They're really good Goodwill stores out there. Secondhand stores, school, church, thrift sales, you name it. With you know, very little effort, you can find low price, high quality used clothing items that can be worn for many, many years. You want to assess clothing in terms of quality as well as price. You know, consider the fabric, the stitching, the washability, all these other things, and then really try to clean your clothes inexpensively. You know, wash and iron clothes yourself. If you use a cleaner, compare prices at different establishments. You know, a 50-cent difference on cleaning a shirt, for example, can add up to over $100 a year. So you want to be able to make sure you're doing that. And also, let's go with communications real quick before we close here. You know, want to do an overall assessment of your communication cost as internet and wireless use grows. Many consumers are overpaying for unneeded communication capacity overall. And for example, you know, if you have a cell phone and two phone lines, you know, one for your computer, consider receiving personal calls on your cell phone so you can give up the other phone line. Many people are doing that, and it makes financial sense. You want to communicate by email rather than by phone. If you're online, email communications are virtually free. That's really nice, and you want to be aware that your cell phone costs and how to reduce them. You know, data overcharges, data charges, cell phones use can dramatically increase communications expenses, especially in a household if you've got kids. Consider those peak calling periods, area coverage, roaming, termination. I know that's extremely confusing at times, but make sure your calling plan matches the pattern of those calls that you make. So that's it. That's a lot of stuff there, about 54 ways to save money. I think I got to almost all of them. I have a few left over. Maybe we can add them in the next show. But just want to end here as we run up at the end of the hour. Thanks again to everybody for listening. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm here. I'm a registered financial advisor under LPL Securities. And I hope today was some help for you as we talked about the market, talked about last week and where the market is now. Talk about whether you should sell your stocks and if they're too expensive. We talked about Janet Yellen and the upcoming FOMC meeting on Wednesday. So all eyes will be glued to that. I'm sure yours will. I know ours will. I don't know if yours will, but ours will. And hopefully making sure that we helped you today save over 54 ways to save some money on the show. Money Matters with Greg. It's a financial literacy show here on 103.1 FM WVLP. I hope everybody has a fantastic week. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
Greg Farrell is the president, CEO of Farrell Wealth, and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. All individuals should get their proper advice investing and managing their personal finances. Money. Get back.